Imagine that you worked for your entire life for one goal and one purpose. You trained and you worked and you grinded and you pushed through, and time after time, when you felt like you were in your best shape, it didn't work out. You didn't reach your goal. You failed and you didn't find the success you're looking for. Then all of a sudden, when you had no idea it was gonna happen, you turn the corner. You look at your watch, you see the time, and you're 200 meters away from the finish line, and you think, this could be the time. All the sacrifices, all the hard work, all the years and sweat and pain and tears that you went through is all gonna pay off. This is Drew, and you're listening to the Transformations Through Running podcast. Before we get into the interview, just a quick word from our sponsors from TrueForm. This is TriMag, and it's a magnesium supplement in liquid form. It's fantastic for muscle recovery, restless legs, to help you sleep better, and to help you get back to 100% form after long runs and grueling workouts. We've used three different forms of magnesium for optimal results. Our absorption rate is 95%. Which is astounding when it comes to magnesium supplements. You take it first thing in the morning, just a teaspoon. It's going to give you a natural boost of energy. And it's also going to help you sleep late into the evenings. For more details, visit trueformlife.com/TriMag magnesium supplement. Today's guest is Shane Inman. He's a realtor at RE/MAX Estate Properties in South Bay. He's an assistant cross-country coach at West Torrance High School. In 2018, Shane won two half marathons, a marathon, and qualified for the 2020 U.S. Olympic Marathon Trials. An incredible interview that's sure to inspire. Hope you enjoy. Yeah, it's our pleasure. I'm excited. We got a chance to sit down and have a tea. It's always interesting for me to be able to sit across from someone. I'm so grateful for the show and the connections we've been able to make and the relationships over the years. And it's no different here. I've recently found you on social media, and here we are with an interview, and you have some exciting news. I'm so excited to share this topic with our audience and let them know what it's like, because as we talked about, it's not always all that glamorous, all the ins and outs that it takes to make it happen. So tell me, let's take a step back. Tell us who you are and what you're doing, and then I'll get into my questions.
So I actually am doing quite a bit of different things. I'm a realtor for RE/MAX Estate Properties, and then I coach high school cross country and track, and as well, I coach a few adult athletes for their own race goals, and then I have my own training and racing that I'm focused on that takes up time as well.
Yeah, that's a lot, and it feels like we're doing so many things in today's day and age. I don't think many people are just doing, like, no one's working on a Ford car in a factory line anymore.
I know, right?
So your exciting news, you recently qualified for the Olympic trials, is that correct?
Yeah, no, I've been working at trying to qualify since 2008, and I've had many unsuccessful attempts and, you know, races that went wrong, or injuries in a buildup, or, you know, things just didn't go right with weather, or for whatever reason didn't get it. And then at CIM last December, I was able to hit the qualifying standards. So it was kind of a bucket list dream that I'd been working at for a very long time, and kind of had gotten to a point where I wasn't sure if it was ever going to happen.
And then, so what did that feel like? Take us through it. Is there a moment where you're like in celebration, where you know you got that time, or are you sitting and waiting to see other people's times?
If you run under 2:19, that's the qualifying standard for the men's. And at CIM, like I said, I'd been working at it for so long that it kind of built up in my mind as something that almost seemed unattainable. When I first started trying to get it, like I'd had friends that had qualified, and I'd had races that seemed like they had, you know, the chance to do it, and I was confident that I could do it. But then after you fail at it so many times, you start to kind of lose confidence in it. And so at CIM, I mean, that was my big goal in my build up for it. All my workouts were done at that pace to try to achieve that time standard. And then on the day of, everything went well and I felt strong and I was hitting pace. And at mile 20, I actually kind of started like hyperventilating a little bit because I was like, I'd never gotten to mile 20 feeling that good and feeling like I was going to qualify. And so I almost basically sabotaged myself. Like at that point, I kind of freaked out and my heart rate spiked and like everything just kind of like tensed up because I got so worried that I was going to hit that, which sounds kind of strange to say. But after that, I kind of backed off on the pace a little bit and I was like, well, I'm not going to qualify now. And I just kind of gave up. And so in my mind, the last 10K, I didn't think I was going to qualify, but then I just kept telling myself, well, this is still going to be a big PR. I got to keep pushing it because this is going to be an accomplishment. And even if it's not what I wanted, I got to try to get, you know, my best performance out of it. And so I was just pushing at that point. And I think it almost helped me out because I stopped stressing about hitting the time standard and just said, okay, I'm going to do the best I can do right now. And then with a mile to go, I saw on the clock and it said 2:11 something, and I was like, why would they have a random clock out here just with at the mile marker to go? And then I was like, oh wait, it's not a mile to go, it's, you know, 1.2 miles to go. And I was like, if you add, you know, that extra 400 meters, that actually would make me right around 2:18 something. I was like, wow, I still have a chance to qualify. And so at that point I just was like, okay, I gotta go. And so I really started pushing. And then the way the course is set up, you finish along this, you run down this long street for a long time, and then you finish at the Capitol building in Sacramento, and you make this turn to go towards the Capitol building. And right when you make that turn, you've got maybe 200 meters or less, and you can see the clock, and I could see it was like 2:17 something. I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna make it. Like, and it was that moment that I realized that it was like, I'm going to qualify for the trials. And it was like something that I had, you know, dreamed about and worked for so long that it was just like a shock. Like I couldn't believe that it happened.
Oh my gosh. You got me a little emotional here. So you hit that turn and you're like, oh my gosh, did it still take some time to like hold yourself together? You're like, don't celebrate or don't panic. You still have 200 meters to go. Or did you know?
Yeah,
you're like,
no, yeah, no. Honestly, the thing I was most worried about was like, that I was, my hamstrings were going to pull up on me or something, that I was going to, you know, something was going to tie up and I was going to have to just come to a stop. But I mean, in that last little stretch where I could see the clock, like it was just all emotion. Like I was like in shock that I was going to do it because that was a 7-minute PR for me. So not only was it, you know, something I'd been working at for a long time, it was a huge PR to where I almost couldn't believe that it happened.
So when you cross the finish line, is it like, what kind of emotions are you going through?
Oh, it was awesome. I mean, I grew up about maybe 40 minutes from there. So I had a lot of friends and family there. My fiance was at the finish line and, you know, just a lot of people around that I knew. So it was one of those things where it happened at a good place too, where there was so much support there that, you know, everybody was excited as I was.
So did they know you qualified as well?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'd tried a couple times. Actually, this same exact race I had tried to qualify at in 2011 for the 2012 Olympic trials. And I had dropped out at mile 17 because I was having IT band problems. And so I dropped out and was, and it's a point-to-point course, so I was kind of like stuck out in the middle of nowhere. And so I had all my friends and family at the finish line waiting for me for hours and hours and hours. So I almost was kind of telling people, like, don't come to watch because I'm afraid that if I don't make it, I don't want you sitting around waiting for hours again, you know? And this course was actually my very first marathon that I ever ran, and it didn't go very well in my first marathon. I was not prepared for it the first time I ran it, and I had to stop and At like mile 20, I had to stop and walk, and I was just like really dizzy and lightheaded. And that was my first ever marathon. So it was kind of like I had had so many bad experiences at this race, but I knew that, you know, it was one of those kind of races that if things went right, it could go really well at. But if things went wrong, I'd already had all the bad things happen. So
it seems like such a big risk. Like, you're putting yourself out there, and we don't, I love this story. I love this interview already. We don't see that side of it. Like, you put yourself out there in such a big way to achieve this giant goal, but there's so much opportunity for failure.
Oh, definitely. You're definitely putting all your eggs in one basket with the marathon. I mean, I had so many buildups where I was like, this is going to be my race. I feel so good. I'm so fit. And then I have like a really great workout. And then the next morning, wake up and my ankle's bothering me, my IT band's bothering me, something. And all of a sudden, I got to take a couple weeks off. And now I got to drop out from the race because it's not going to work out. Or like this, so the same race, CIM, in 2012, the year after I dropped out, I came back and I was fit, and I was like, okay, you know what, this is my chance for redemption. Like, I dropped out last year, I'm gonna run a big PR today, and really I'm fit and ready to go. And it ended up being a year where there was like huge headwinds and pouring rain the entire year, or the entire race, and there was just like, you know, probably 6 inches of sitting water on the course. I ran in a trash bag for the first half of the race. And then I took the trash bag off because I was like, this is so frustrating. Like, I didn't come here to go and jog in the rain and storm and everything. And so I took off the trash bag and threw it, and then immediately regretted that because I was freezing the second half of the race. So I ended up having kind of a, you know, I was happy with my effort that day, but my time wasn't great because of the weather and the headwinds and everything. But it was just one of those things where it's like, I've put everything into this race, and then the weather doesn't come my way on race day. So you never know, like, you know, you put all this time and effort in, and it doesn't, you know, always align with a good performance.
Oh man, how frustrating. So it seems like there's very small room or very minimal margin for error. Is that across elite running in general, or is that how you feel you're at specifically? It seems like everything has to go right on the right day to get to where you want to be. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're trying to do your best and put squeeze every drop you have out, you have to be kind of on that edge of, you know, not running out too fast the first part of the race, not, you know, making sure that you're fueling right. And all these little things, they add up to, and if it goes right and the weather's right on that day, it can be a great performance. But if one of those things are off, it's easy to kind of get discouraged and say, okay, today is not my day, and it doesn't go well. I think that the work you put into it going in really pays off. You just have to make sure all the little details along the way go well as well.
All right, let's take a step back here for a moment and tell us what a training schedule, like, is it a grueling training schedule? I think when you mentioned when we talked, you were running twice a day. Give our audience a chance to learn what it's like to actually train and lead up to something like this.
Yeah, so for this race, I kind of took a step back on intensity because I wanted to stay healthy and make sure that I made it to the line and was able to race. But at the same time, my goal was to qualify. So I upped my volume quite a bit. I would say the 8 weeks leading up to it, I was every week over 100 miles a week. And then my highest week was 150 mile week. And so I don't know what that, what would that be in kilometers?
Yeah, I don't know. I need a kilometer calculator.
Right. So that's, you know, 150 miles is a lot. But most days I was doubling, and then the weekends I'd do my long run. And the one thing I really tried to focus on in the training cycle, aside from getting the big miles in, was making my workouts or my long runs into a workout. So for for instance, I might do a 10-mile warm up and then a 10-mile run at marathon pace, or I might do like one of my big workouts was a 3-mile warm up in the morning, then 8 miles at 5:30 per mile pace, and then a 2-mile cool down, and then come back later that night and do the workout again. So that was like, what is that, 5, 6, that's like 24 miles for the day total, with 16 of it at a little slower than goal marathon pace, but it's a lot. It's a lot of volume and a lot of volume at pace. And so a lot of my workouts were kind of tire the legs out and then try to run marathon pace after that. So they would be like long warm up and then working on race pace. So nothing super super fast, but just kind of cumulative fatigue and trying to run fast on fatigued legs.
Oh my gosh. You're doing that. I mean, once a day, I think for the average person is more than enough at that. And you're doing it twice a day. So how long would you do something like that leading up until a race?
So I really try to, for me, I focus on like 8 to 10 weeks before a race. So I had run last year in August. I had run the Santa Rosa Marathon, and then I took a couple weeks off after that, and then I slowly started to build back up. And so by October, I was back to like over 100 miles a week, and then so I kept it at that. That volume for all of October and all of November, because mentally it's just really hard to stay focused for that amount of time. Like for me anyways, to do more than like 2 months at a time of high volume, you know, I'll run consistently all the time. Like I just ran a race 3 weeks ago and I'm just now building back up, and maybe in another week or two, I'll be back over 100 miles a week again. It's just, it's hard to continually put that effort in, not even just like workouts or anything, but just getting out the door twice a day is a lot.
Yeah. So for 2 months, you're going for twice a day at that rate?
Yeah. Twice a day. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I usually, you know, try to get up early morning and like 6 a.m. and try to get something in, and then run again in the afternoon or evening. Luckily I coach the high school team, so I have, you know, 100 plus kids on the team to run with in the afternoon. And then I also have a really big run club here, the South Bay Run Club, where we've got, you know, every day of the week there's a group run. We can meet up and run with somebody. So I think half the battle is just getting out the door. So if you know you have other people to run with, it definitely makes it easier.
So do the kids ever challenge you? Are they all ever like, I'm going to beat coach today?
Oh yeah. No, they do all the time. They're good. I mean, we took third at state last year and they won state the year before. So, so these kids, I mean, my top kid has run 4:12 in the mile and 9:10 in the 2 mile. So, you know, they're really pushing it. When I was in high school, I ran 9:17 and 4:17. So he's already running faster than I was. So I'm just trying to keep up.
Okay. And does nutrition play a role with your lifestyle or with runners in general? I'm always interested to know, because of that grueling schedule, twice a day runs, do you try to do your best to stay on track with nutrition as well?
I would say yes and no, because I love every kind of junk food there is. My diet is terrible, and so if I have an injury or if I'm taking time off from running for a little bit, my weight definitely goes up quite a bit, because I still eat like I'm running 100 miles a week. But the other side of it is, if you are running 100 miles a week, you can pretty much eat anything and it burns it off real quickly. So I try to eat a little bit cleaner as I get closer to a race. So I don't say like, oh, I've got to only eat you know, fruits and vegetables, or I've got to only eat this type of food. I just say, okay, I need to try to get in more fruits and vegetables. I need to not eat any junk food, and I need to just try to, you know, eat clean and not go to eat fast food or eat out at restaurants or anything as much. But yeah, most of the time I'm guilty of just eating whatever's in front of me.
Well, the handful of runners that I know kind of seems like the same deal, but that always interests me. I want to ask you about the excitement leading up now to the Olympic trials. So, I mean, the pressure put on you by others. I mean, I've played elite sports myself, and I feel like many times it's kind of like other people surround you, put more pressure on you than you do yourself. Is that how you feel? Or maybe you could walk us through what you're going to be going through this next bit until you go to Atlanta.
Yeah, so the race is in February. It's actually on February 29th of 2020. And so, I feel like I've still got quite a bit of time till then. And so I think because of that, I don't feel as much pressure. I'm just trying to kind of just enjoy running a little bit. Like, I put so much pressure on myself to try to qualify for the trials that, I mean, I was going crazy. I mean, and I remember the night before the race, I was just so nervous. And so in part of that is I accomplished that goal that I'd been trying for so, so long. I don't expect to go and run another huge PR and make the Olympic team. I just want to show up and be out there competitive and have a good day and see where I fit into the mix. If I can, you know, have a good competition and be in the mix, I'll be happy. And if I can perform, you know, to my best, that's good. But yeah, definitely people the day of and the day after I qualified, people were coming up to me and saying, you made the Olympic trials. Like, what's next? Or how are you going to make the Olympic team now? I'm like, that's a huge step. You know, I just PR'd by 7 minutes. I'm going to have to PR by another 7 minutes to make the Olympic team. So I'm realistic that, you know, I think that the Olympic trials qualifying in itself was a huge accomplishment for me, and anything I can do at the trials is just, you know, icing on the cake.
And you were saying that there's over 200 other athletes that are going to be running the same trial?
Yeah, usually it ends up being around 200 guys that hit the qualifying standard. I mean, it's literally whoever makes the standard of, so it's under 2:19 for the marathon, and so that's 5:18 per mile. So anyone that runs that time gets to qualify to run on that day for the Olympic trials. And so that could be, you know, I think so far at least 150 guys have qualified, but that could be 400 on race day. It's just it's depending on, you know, where the competition level's at that point. Usually though, I would say ends up being around 200 guys that end up qualifying for the trials.
Do you know what that looks like when you arrive? Can you take us through that? Or maybe we'll have to do an interview when it's over with. Do you know what it's like when you arrive, you stay in a hotel, you run the next day, or any details like that?
Yeah. So actually, I just got an email yesterday from the Atlantic Track Club. They're the ones putting on the race. And, I'm actually really lucky that I qualified this year and not in 2016, because the Atlantic Track Club is hosting the trials this year, and they're doing a great job with supporting the athletes as far as, like, they're paying for the travel and they're, you know, reaching out and setting up, you know, when you need to be here or be there, and what the schedule's like. They're going to roll it out kind of week by week, they said. They just sent me the course map, which it looks pretty challenging. It's got a lot of elevation. So it'll be a really tough course, which I think is good, because, you know, any kind of championship race, you add other elements and it just makes it a more competitive race rather than just a time trial.
And what does it look like? Is it too far? I mean, you're here in LA. Is it too far for family and friends? Will a few people be joining you? Can you actually watch this? Or does people just kind of hang around the finish line possibly?
That's a good question. Like I said, Atlanta Track Club is doing a really good job putting it on. So I would think there'll be some good coverage of it, at very least online. I think I'll have some family and friends who will go. I would guess my parents and my fiance will probably be there. But yeah, I mean, it is Atlanta. It's kind of far. So I don't expect a lot of people to head out there.
So is this the same situation where you're like, maybe you guys shouldn't come? Or
yeah, right. no, I don't. I'm not putting as much pressure on myself. I mean, it's not I'm gonna do everything I can to be in the best shape I can be at on that day. But you know, you can't control how things end up.
Yeah, I think that's so cool that you have that opportunity. Like for me, when I played, I just wanted to kind of come. I'm just gonna take a minute here.
Sorry, the trash guy outside showed up. Can you hear him?
Yeah, I can hear him.
Sorry.
That's all right. I'm not sure. Should we wait or is he done?
Hold on. Let me look real quick.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Looks like he's leaving now.
It's fun. You know what's funny is sorry, now, about like, that. That's okay. Like, now I'm doing recordings in LA. So I got to change my schedule too. It's
really?
It's just funny. Well, because, like, I'm not, because we do, they have trash here Fridays.
You change your schedule based on the trash days? That's funny.
I'm going to, because, like, right now I can't have my windows open. And yeah. Even if they're closed, I think I could probably hear the trash guys.
Yeah, my windows are closed.
Yeah. Anyways, it's just kind of funny. Different places, different environment.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that. Of course, the one day of the week they come at this time.
Right. Okay, we'll just carry on.
All right, cool.
Yeah, I think it's awesome that you get that opportunity. For me, when I played, I just wanted to be, I wanted to compete against the best. And that was, for me, like, I always wanted to, I played baseball for years, and I wanted to compete against the best pitcher. Like, I was never scared. I didn't want to, like, shy away. Like, some guys, they just didn't, like, oh, I hope so-and-so is not pitching today. But, like, I feel like I worked incredibly hard. And then I wanted to know, like, I wanted to see, like, it's against you and me today, and we're going to see who's better. Like, that always excited me. But I think it's cool for you to, you get a chance to run and you get a chance to compete and you get a chance to hang out and talk to some of these people that have been competing or running at elite levels for years.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm excited to toe the line. I definitely kind of go both ways with the competitive side. Like, if there's a small local race and it's got, you know, $500 prize money for first place, I'm like, I hope nobody fast shows up. but if it's a race where I'm as fit as I can be and I want to have my best performance, then I'm like, I want the best people there, because that's going to pull me along to do better. Like, at CIM, I think I took like maybe like 47th place or so, because it was the U.S. Championships. And so I started the race, I think I was ranked like 300 and something off of my marathon PR. And so the first half of the race, I don't think I was even in the top 100 of the field. But that really helped, because I was able to just kind of turn my brain off and sit in the pack and run nice and controlled and not worry about pacing, because there was just so many other guys around that I could just latch on to and run with. So I think having other people just makes you or just elevates you to a whole nother level, you know?
So if there's that many people running and you're ranked, whatever you're ranked, are you placed? That always interests me. Like, how do they tell who gets to stand at the front of the race and who has to start at the back?
So that, I would say the biggest thing that it helps with, if you're placed in the front, because yeah, you apply with your times to the athlete coordinator, and they will assign you like you either made the elite squad or you didn't. But after that, they also will give bottle service, so you can put your custom water bottles out on the course, which I think is a huge advantage, because you can put whatever kind of mix you want in there. I was not in the top 100 seated, so I didn't get to put water bottles out on the course. So for the first time I'd ever had to do this, I ran with a handheld water bottle for the first half of the race, which I was not like really confident about doing. I felt like that was added weight, but I've been doing more like ultra trail races where I've had to run with a water bottle or a vest. And so I got a little bit more accustomed to running with a bottle, and it didn't kind of worry me as much as it might have in the past. So the first half of the race, I just had a water bottle full of a calorie mixed drink, and I just kind of sipped on that for the first half. And then every 5 miles I took in gels, and I was wearing arm sleeves. So I just tucked the gels in my arm sleeves. And then, every time I needed a gel, I just pulled it out. So it's like, you're wearing, you know, a tank top and short shorts, and you got to find a spot to put all your energy gels and calories that you're going to try to take in over 26 miles. So it definitely helps to have the bottle service where they kind of, they'll align your, you give them your bottles the day before the race, and they'll put them out there on the fluid course or the fluid tables throughout the race, and you can just pick them up. You label them with your name and everything, and it definitely makes it easier.
Backwards. Seems like, yeah. the ones that have slower times, they should get a bit more of an advantage.
I know, right? Get every little bit you can. I know. But yeah, it definitely makes a difference. They haven't broken that down yet for the trials, but I'd imagine that everybody in the trials will have bottle service, which is a lot. I mean, that's, you know, if you get 200 guys in the race, that's a lot of bottles out on the table. It's hard to find your own.
So do you ever go and do like a fun run? Like, you're just going to go, like, they have color runs or like obstacle course runs, or if you do those, do you have to, are you like trying to beat everyone? Or can you relax and have fun?
You know, I'm always competitive. Like I've been trying to enjoy running more by doing like trail races and stuff. Like I just did the Kodiak 100 miler. And for me, that was like just a bucket list. I was like, you know, I'm not really sure how my body is going to react after 100 miles. Like, I may never be able to run again. So I was like, I've already hit my goal PR for the marathon. So, you know, I might as well give it a shot and see what I can do. And it actually ended up being a horrible experience where I was like puking for the entire day. Every time I'd try to eat something, my body would reject it and I would puke it back up. From like mile 57 to the end, I was just puking nonstop. And then after the race, so it's been 3 weeks since the race, and my feet have been like pins and needles, like numb. Like if your feet fall asleep, that's how they've felt nonstop since the race.
Oh my gosh.
It's a kind of a weird sensation, but I've talked to a few different people who have done 100 milers, and they've said that that's not that uncommon, and it'll go away after like a couple months or so. But it's just kind of a strange sensation to have every single day. And so I've been getting back going with my training, but at first I was kind of afraid to run because I didn't want to like do nerve damage or something. So hearing that other people have had that same issue and have just ran through it, I was like, okay, I can start back to training. But I've been kind of trying to do like different things like trail races and, you know, just running with running groups and having fun and enjoying running a little bit more. Because for a long time I thought that like running had to be like hard all the time. Like if I want to reach my goals, I have to be very regimented. I have to really put everything I have into every single workout and every single run. And I think you can get a little too stressed out about that and kind of worry yourself into not reaching your performance. Kind of like what I was saying during the race at mile 20, I just kind of started hyperventilating because I'd put so much pressure on myself about hitting this time for so many years, and now I was going to hit it, and I was afraid that I was going to screw it up somehow. So I think running should be a little bit more fun, and I've just been trying to do different things, different races, and you know, go to run clubs and enjoy it a lot more lately.
Just before we wrap things up, I want to ask you here before we go, are you worried at all? Like, it sounds like I mean, it seems a bit dangerous. I mean, is it scary at all to know that if you go and do a big run like that, you are going to have these types of side effects? Like, I kind of wonder, like, if that short term was long term, right? Does that ever cross your mind?
You know, I don't know, because I, when I was in my freshman year of high school, I got a stress fracture in my pelvis. And they didn't know a lot about stress fractures at that time. And the doctor actually wanted me to have surgery where they were going to put a plate on my hip. And he was like, yeah, if you do this surgery, you might be able to run again. And then if you don't do the surgery, it's never going to heal, because it's a weight-bearing section of your body where you're standing on it, you're sitting on it, and it's just never going to heal. So you'll never get to run again. And that was my freshman year of high school, and I was running again my sophomore year. So I don't know. Like, I feel like I've had so many different things happen with running over the years that, you know, there's no way of knowing how it's going to affect later in life. But your body's pretty resilient and kind of, you know, rebuilds itself to make itself stronger. So I feel like just got to enjoy running and keep putting in the work, and my body will keep rebuilding itself.
So did you do the surgery or no?
No, I didn't. That's what I mean. Like, it was like one of those things where the doctor was like, yeah, you need to have this surgery or you'll never be able to run again. And I was like, I'm not having a surgery. That's crazy. And I didn't do the surgery. And then my body just kind of made itself stronger. And it was, I mean, I couldn't run for probably 6 months. And I could barely walk most of the time, but then it just, you know, little by little, my bones and muscles and everything around it got stronger, and now I don't feel the pain at all anymore. So, you know, you're going to have a lot of aches and pains, but you just got to kind of put in the work and get stronger.
Rub some dirt on it and get back in there.
Exactly.
Awesome, Shane. That was a fantastic interview. Thank you so much for joining us. Is there anything, I know you do some coaching. Is there anything that you want to mention? Sometimes we give my guests a chance to talk about their website or products at the end of the show. Is there anything that you want to share with us, or maybe a message, anything at all?
No, I mean, just, you know, I think anyone can reach any goal they have. That's the thing about running, is like, it's not where, you know, like other sports with talent makes such a huge effect on it. Anyone can reach their goals if they put their time and effort into it and work harder than anybody else around them. So yeah. And then, I mean, you can follow me on social media, Chey Inman, Inman. So Shane Inman, on Instagram or Facebook or anything, if you want to connect.
Awesome, Shane. Thank you so much. We, will look forward to hearing how it goes.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
I told you, didn't I? I told you that was going to be inspirational. I love that story from Shane. I hope you did too. This is another Transformations Through Running podcast with myself, Drew Teddy. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for tuning in. Before we go, one more shout out to our True Form sponsor, TriMag. This is a magnesium supplement in liquid form. It's a great way to boost your energy and help you recover after long runs or after tough workouts. Muscle recovery is definitely one of its main benefits, to help you sleep into the evening. And we all know, if we don't get a restful night's sleep, it's very difficult for our body to recover and bounce back for that next run. Visit trueformlife.com/TriMag magnesium supplement for more details. If you're active on social media, we'd love to connect. Find me on Instagram at Drew Taddea, or pretty active on Facebook as well. Facebook.com/TrueFormLife. Once again, thanks so much for being here.